Alrighty, what's up everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Troy Talk Podcast. We have a special episode for the listeners with some new guests on the pod today. We'll be going over a season preview of USC basketball, as well as a quick recap of the Temple, and then also a more extensive recap of the Florida Gulf Coast game. Lucky enough to be joined by two of the most avid USC fans I know, starting off with our newly minted East Coast friend, Mike Yang. Mike, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Pretty good. Can't complain. Have you started to feel a sudden urge to root for Tom Brady since you've moved to the East Coast?
Never.
Okay, just making sure. I know you're a big fan of his. All right, and then we're also joined by Cristiano Ronaldo super fan, Robert Sanchez. Rob, thanks for making time out of your busy schedule to be here. How's everything going?
Going well. Yeah, no, I appreciate the invite, and yeah, just enjoying this time off from club soccer. Manchester United yeah. Fans this week.
Yeah, quick international break. US had a little bit of a stumble today, but as they always do when they play away from home, it's CONCACAF's just another piece. But that's a different topic for a different day. All right, so I guess we could start the pod off with a quick recap of the Temple game. I'll start kind of just my thoughts of it. Definitely a tale of two halves. Our first half was pretty good. I mean, it wasn't the cleanest half, but we were up 20, which on the road against a team like that, I think you'll take up 20, but definitely a different, situation in the second half. Let them back in the game, and it was a pretty raucous crowd. And actually, we had Mike Yang attend the game in Temple, or at Temple, which is in Philly. Mike, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. So why don't you give us kind of the lowdown of what you saw that day?
Yeah, I thought the first half was, well, the refs were very involved in the game, mm-hmm. and not in a good way. And in the first half, we were able to manage. Like, we started out kind of slow because we weren't able to match our physicality. But once we settled in, we ended basically like from, I think, maybe like the 6 minute mark on, like, we were playing really good basketball, and we carried like a 15-point lead into the half or something like that. And then the second half, I think, like you said, definitely the crowd got to them a little bit, and then Temple match stayed up with their physicality, and the refs stopped calling the same fouls. So right. And then Mobley came in and had a couple bad turnovers, and that kind of ruined our momentum a little bit, but thankfully we were able to hang on for the win.
So correct me if I'm wrong, it was like the first couple minutes Mobley got some quick fouls, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Were they ticky tack? I don't even remember. I remember he just went out of the game, and I didn't even realize it.
Yeah, I didn't. I honestly didn't either. And then I didn't know that he had two fouls until I had to check my ESPN app. But yeah, they were definitely calling in general, like on both sides, they were calling a lot of ticky tacky fouls. Like both teams were into the double foul with I think like 7 minutes left in the half, which is just ridiculous.
But. Yeah, and I think that benefits Temple for sure, because like while we play, I think, pretty good man defense and pretty good defense in general, we're not really a reaching team or like a physical body em up kind of defense. We're more of like use our length to like intercept the passing lanes, and Temple was definitely the beat you up kind of defense where they kind of wanted to get in your face and make the refs call that. So I think it definitely benefited them that they had the refs going like that, and it definitely changed in the second half and, benefited their play style a little bit more. How was the crowd? I heard you said it was pretty unruly, to say the least.
Yeah, well, I was doing the usual, like, talking trash, but I, like, had my hesitations, and then eventually I was like, you know what, like, let's just do it. But, yeah, the crowd was really into it. Even when they were down like 20 points in the beginning of the second half, like any made shot, like the crowd would explode. I can't honestly remember. The only time I can remember like a similar experience was when USC played Arizona in like I think it was the double OT game when we were in college. And that was like obviously that was a special experience, right? This is like an out of conference game for them, and they're not very good, and they were down a lot, but the crowd was still as into it as it was. Like, I was honestly pretty impressed.
Yeah, I didn't really – I mean, they've been okay the last couple of years, I guess, but nothing, like, out of the ordinary. And the fact that they can kind of, keep that the fans showing up like that, it kind of reminds me how, like, Syracuse just like no matter how good they are in a season, it's just like, you know, packed. Like they could be 12-11 and having a bad year, and that place is just like rocking. It gives them a home field advantage. So, I mean, it's a good win. Doesn't really matter how you look at it. Going on the road, showed some resilience with Mobley, you know, being out. And I mean, Goodwin's been really good this year. Actually, surprisingly so. I was expecting like maybe a little bit of improvement, but I think he's taken a step forward to where he actually is like an offensive threat. What do you guys think about that?
Agreed. It's like today, it's I keep mentioning that little mark. I remember it was like 5 minutes into the second half. The crowd was starting to really get into it. And him knocking down those back-to-back threes, it was nice. I was like, oh man, that, even though, you know, maybe the stat sheet doesn't look great if you just give it a quick glance for him today. Still, I think that at the moments that he came in today, he was pretty clutch.
I
could agree with that.
Go for it, Mike. Go for it.
Yeah, I could definitely agree with that. He's led our team in scoring in the past two games, right?
We talking about Goodwin or Mobley?
Goodwin.
Yeah, Goodwin has. But yeah, I think so. Which is not what you would expect.
He just provides that like consistent post scoring. I definitely don't want him creating, but anytime he's like, getting a ball off, he's, you know, pretty good at just converting that shot. So.
No, that's a really good point, because I think like Mobley's been kind of getting a lot of flack the last two games just for kind of forcing the issue, but I think we're relying on Mobley to create a little bit more, and Goodwin's kind of free to just sit down in the post and score and kind of like let the ball come to him, or if he gets in the post, do just a quick jump hook. So I think he's a lot more free to play his style, which, I mean, we saw it last year. If he got the ball in the post, he was not passing the ball, and it's continued this year. But obviously he's been a little bit more efficient, so it's fine. I mean, everybody needs someone who's assertive on the offensive end. And I think we got that with Boogie too, and we can talk about that a little bit later. He's definitely assertive and looking to create his own shot, which, you know, you like to see. But yeah, good win. I definitely did not want it to be as close as it was at the end, but was happy that, like, I texted you guys in the group chat to see that inbounds play at the end. That is just, I have been calling for that for so long. That never fails, running the football inbounds play. It's just like they don't know what to do, that nobody practices against it, and it's just like it's an automatic open guy. I don't know why they chose Drew Peterson to get the ball to, because that guy, for whatever reason, can't make free throws, but he made both of them, so can't really complain.
Right.
Okay, so I guess we can transition now to the season preview. This was originally the idea of the pod. We'll probably, just for the people at home, just kind of give you an overview. We'll talk about, you know, our predictions for this year as far as like wins, where we think they're going to finish, maybe where they're going to get seeded in the tournament if they make the tournament. And then we kind of go more in depth on like superlatives, like rookie of the year, most improved player, most valuable player, things like that. And I think that should about cover it. And we can end it up with a little bit of recap from today. And I think Rob and I can take that as Mike didn't get to catch all the game today, but should be a good way to end it. Okay. So to start it off, where do you think in the Pac-12 USC will finish this year? You can go, Mike.
For
first.
Me, okay, Mike, go ahead.
Honestly, I haven't been catching many of the other teams. I caught UCLA playing against Villanova, and they looked, like your last podcast said, they look really legit. But I hadn't honestly had a chance to catch any of the other Pac-12 teams. I saw that Stanford lost to. It was like an out-of-conference team that was
There were a couple like bad loss. I mean, typical bad losses. Pac-12 always loses to like bad teams out of conference to start the season. So the bottom is going to be the bottom. I think Cal's going to be bad, things like that. But I think you're right, UCLA being at the top of the list there. What do you think, Rob?
Agreed. If I'm being honest, UCLA just looks far and away. They returned everyone. Probably going to be dominating, so I won't be catching any of their games the way I used to hate watch some of these past seasons. But slightly off topic, the one team that I think is going to randomly make some noise that they just caught my attention last year with, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, Abogidi, Washington State. I just have a lot of confidence, and for some reason I think they're well coached. But as far as USC goes, I can realistically, I know there's a little bit of fan in there. I can realistically see us finish second. Although the Ducks are going to be tough, even though they have a lot of new players coming in, it seems like Dana always has his guys playing well and he gets them going by the time conference play comes around. So I think between us two, that'll be the 2 and 3, and you know, maybe we, our guys click even more than I expect, and we'll make some surprises here and there.
No, I think that's a really good call with Washington State. I think they can end up being kind of like the Oregon State of last year. They are well coached, like you mentioned. They're 3-0 so far this year. And I mean, on KenPom, they're top 60, which, I mean, Washington State top 60 on KenPom is like unheard of. They're usually like in the 150s. So that's a really good call. And they've always kind of given USC like a tough game. We've always managed to come out on top, but it's definitely not an easy game going up there. I've heard that's like one of the tougher places to play, which is like a random thing. I don't really understand that, but like maybe it's just like a weird gym and stuff, and going into Pullman because nobody wants to go to Pullman. It's probably just makes it a little tougher. But I agree. I think unfortunately I would pick UCLA just off of what I've seen so far as the number one. I do think that USC plays UCLA very well, and at least the past couple of years under Enfield, he kind of has their number. And the fact that the team isn't new kind of helps Enfield in a way, I think, because he knows how to play against them, but also hurts them just because, you know, obviously they have some studs on that team and they know how to play with each other. And, you know, they have all the momentum with that Final Four run they had last year. But and then also Oregon. Yeah, I think Oregon and USC 2-3 is probably what I would predict as well. I mean, Oregon's 22 on KenPom, so kind of in that next tier, and USC's at 17 in KenPom. So basically makes sense what you predicted. Mike, you think second as well, or are you thinking better or worse?
Yeah, I would say second. And then, you know, depending on how we play UCLA, I really think we have a chance to push for first. Mm-hmm. You know, like UCLA might finish better than us, like out of conference. But anytime we play them, like you guys said, it's always a close game. I think as long as the key is just, I think usually when we play teams and we don't struggle in the beginning, we can usually keep things pretty close. Like we don't really get blown out that much anymore. So
unless it's like Colorado, because at Colorado we can never win that game and we always look awful.
Tad Bowl hates us.
So. Yeah, like literally, not even figuratively, literally hates Andy Enfield and USC. But yeah, good call there. The rest of the pack doesn't look great this year. Like ASU, I mean, Oregon State's probably going to be good because they're well coached and they kind of have a philosophy they're following there. So they'll probably make some noise. But ASU look pretty bad. I forgot who they lost to. I was watching. Oh, they lost to Riverside, right, on that buzzer beater?
But, yeah, that's right. That's right.
Three-quarter court buzzer beater, which was nuts, by the way. That was crazy. So they don't look great this year. And ASU is another team that kind of gives USC some fits just because they're annoying and pesky like their coach. And they're always just a tough test. But, I mean, that team is completely new. I think there's maybe like one returning player on that team. And Remy Martin transferred out to Kansas. So.
Oh, yeah, no more Remy. Thank God. Yeah,
it's like love and hate. Like you love to play against that guy because he takes such bad shots all the time. But like when he catches fire, it is impossible to play against that guy. It's just so annoying. But other than that, I see Stanford's like Stanford ASU are like in the 70s for KenPom, which is, I mean, that's not a tournament team. So don't really think they're anybody to worry about. I think basically just Washington State. I'm not even sure where Oregon State is on KenPom. Check. 84. So honestly, not that high for them either. They lost a couple people. I think they lost the Thompson brothers, right? Like they're both gone?
Yeah.
Or are they coming back for their seventh year? the Perry Ellis of the Pac-12. Yeah, those guys are good. They were local boys too. I think if USC could have snagged them, that would have been some really good picks. But I think they went where their dad was. And I mean, obviously, going where your dad was has helped us, so I can't really complain too much. speaking of, just a quick aside, Evan Mobley out 2 to 4 weeks, they said, with an elbow sprain.
Yeah, that's a huge bummer, but man. I feel like right now he's a runaway for the Rookie of the Year, so hopefully.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess Cade Cunningham had a pretty good last game, so he and Jalen Green are probably the only, you know, competition he has, but Mobley's just been, like, far and ahead the best rookie, and honestly he's playing like, you know, like way above his years actually show. So that's
I've been liking all their like Cavs comments. So I guess the algorithm's now showing me all these like Cavs material. And I just love that their fans love him. So I'm like downloading all these memes that I've saved up of Evan Mobley.
Yeah, the meme game is strong in this group chat for sure. And that Cavs team is like, just sorry to take too much of a tangent here, but that Cavs team is fun to watch. Like it's, you know, Darius Garland, Colin Sexton, and Evan Mobley is a good core. And by the way, Rob, that's the player I was talking who Boogie Ellis reminds me of. I think he's like a Colin Sexton clone. It's like the defensive kind of mentality and just like doesn't quit on anything. Probably a little bit better offensive than Colin Sexton, but maybe not as good defense, but it's kind of what it reminds me of.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, alrighty. So if you were to say right now, what seed would you be happy with come tournament time, what would you say? You can start with Mike.
I think if we can get a top four seed, I'd be pretty happy with that. Obviously no one knows what happens throughout the season, but we definitely have, you know, the talent to compete, like you guys both said. So it's just a matter of being healthy enough and playing well, like game to game. So
I agree with that. I mean, I think it's weird that Enfield kind of now has a system. Like growing up watching USC basketball, I don't think we've ever had a coach like stay long enough to have like a system. Like even when Tim Floyd was here, like that was basically just get the studs and let them go out and play basketball. Like there was really no system with Tim Floyd. He was just a really good recruiter and had good players on the court. But I think you're right. Like we should be expecting these, you know, 4, 5, 6 seeds like on the regular, as long as he keeps recruiting people to his system and they buy into the philosophy. Well, you thinking the same thing, Rob?
Yeah, I'm thinking right around 4 or 5. And realistically 5, that it's not, it's crazy to think that that's something we can actually realistically aim for. And avoiding that one seed in the second round, it would be nice. So if we get somewhere around there, I'd be happy, you know, just because I know we don't have that elite level prospect, but I do actually with Boogie here, I love our guard play now.
Yeah, surprisingly, like Taj was great for us last year, and I was kind of worried if we'd be able to create our own shots and score from the guard position. But he's taken that, you know, over, and basically been the same as Taj, and if not better. So I think that's a really good call. I think a 5 seed would probably be what I would expect. I think 4 is reasonable, and you know, higher depending on if we go on a hot streak. But like I think 5 is pretty reasonable. I mean, and as Rob mentioned, like, we were fighting, even when we were good, we were fighting for like 12 seed play-in games. Like even with like J-Mac and all them, like it was always a grind. I think with the exception of that one year where we were a 6 seed or we were an 11 seed when we played SMU and had that crazy game. I don't even remember. We might've been an 11 seed. But either way, it's just never been like a guaranteed tournament spot like you get with other teams. Like, you know, even like Duke, when they're having a down year, it feels like, oh, they got, you know, a 6 seed or something like that. It's something crazy. And I think part of that's playing in the Pac-12. You know, you kind of have to be perfect-ish in the Pac-12. You can't afford a bad loss. Meanwhile, if you're Duke or somebody like that, you're going to be playing so many good teams that you're going to have quality wins. And, you know, we don't always have a lot of quality wins playing in the Pac-12. Like that one year we had, what, 22, 23 wins in one season? Or maybe even more than that, and didn't make the tournament.
Yeah. Troy, I just realized you said like overall turn, like the NCAA tournament. I thought you said the Pac-12 tournament, which was, I was like, top two.
Oh,
like,
no. I meant, yeah, you're right. I probably should have clarified that. NCAA tournament.
Okay. Yeah. Then what you guys said, like a 4 or 5 would be pretty good. But yeah, Pac-12, top two.
Yeah, top two is definitely what we should aim for with that. I mean, this team's good enough for that. And I think that's, I mean, similar to where we're going to finish, right? Like the 1, 2, 3 seed, like that's what we should aim for. And that's what we have the quality to do. Anything worse than 4, I would probably be upset about. 4 would be like, whatever, if, you know, maybe we have some injuries or something, but that's probably the minimum I would expect. Right. And then a segue. So final record. I don't really know how many games we play this year. Honestly, it's probably like 30 something, but like that can change. Things get canceled, you know, counting the tournament games. So I don't really know the total, but like I know like a good set number of wins to shoot for. I was thinking like 23, 24 would be a good year. What do you guys think with that?
Agreed. I'm right around there. Because last year, I know it was a shortened season. What did we finish with? Like 25. With this squad, you know, I don't think it's too crazy to aim for those, like, right below mid 20s. 25, you're looking at a great season. So if we can aim like right under that, I'd be happy with that.
Yeah, I did some quick calculations. We have 30 games this year. So yeah, if we can get around 25, that'd be a pretty good season.
Yeah, I think splitting with UCLA is reasonable. Splitting with Oregon's reasonable too. And then looking at our out of conference, we don't really play anybody like crazy. So we probably should be undefeated out of conference. So yeah.
Does Georgia Tech still have Jordan Usher in a few of those?
Yeah.
They do. They have Sertavant too, yeah.
Oh, okay. That should be a good game.
Yeah, so I was thinking that too. And they, let's see, they lost to Miami of Ohio in their first game. I don't know how good Miami of Ohio is, but maybe that was just a fluke. But yeah, I mean, they were a good tournament team last year. They were making some noise and creating some issues. Miami of Ohio is 114, so not a great loss there to start the season. But yeah, that should be a fun game. Okay. All right, we can move on to the superlatives. What we have on track for us today is the Rookie of the Year, Most Improved, MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, Sixth Man, and Offensive. We can kind of, you know, switch those around if need be, but those are the six categories we have. And I'll just start by asking what you guys think for Rookie of the Year.
Go ahead, Rob.
Realistically, out of the freshman I see getting minutes, I only see Hornery coming in maybe at like today, 1 minute. So out of the people who have a chance, I would say it's, the easy pick would be, if we consider him still a freshman, Reese Sticks and Waters. Mm. As you mentioned, you know, it looks like he really hit the gym this offseason. And I expect him to get more minutes going forward from not like today.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think with him is that extra year just being in a college atmosphere has helped him out a lot. And I think he can be – he looks like he's a pretty good defender from what I've seen. I know the rest of our freshmen are mostly offensive players, at least that I can see. I mean, you have Hornery, who's kind of known as the shooter, and then Malik Thomas is like a pure scorer. And so I think Reese Sticks and Waters. And, I mean, you have Kobe Johnson too, which I think, you know, if you said Kobe Johnson, I wouldn't crucify you on that. I think that's a decent pick as well, but I would agree with you. I think Reese Sticks and Waters probably gets the most minutes, and by default, since this is a pretty veteran team and the rotation is probably going to get smaller, I think he probably is the de facto Rookie of the Year, but maybe Mike has a different take on that.
No, I definitely agree with you guys. Yeah, like you said, it's a veteran team. We basically returned, you know, all the guys except for Taj and Evan Mobley, right? And everyone got better. So there's just not that many minutes to spread around. And I'm just looking at the stat sheet. And so far, the only, other than when we blew out CSUN, the only rookies I've played is Kobe Johnson and RDW. So it's got to be one of those two. And I think RDW is probably more ready right now.
Yeah, I think Kobe Johnson kind of impressed me just with like how ready he looks. I know his brother's did he get drafted this past year, his brother?
What's his brother's name?
Jalen?
Jalen, right? Jalen Johnson?
Duke, yeah.
Oh, brother?
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Yeah, Jalen Johnson was like a top 15 pick. He went to the Hawks.
So like he knows what it's like to be in that competitive family, and he's surrounded by good athletes. So I think he was kind of more ready than I thought he would be coming into the year. And he looks like he could be kind of like that point forward-ish kind of Drew Peterson mode for maybe the upcoming seasons. I don't know about now. I don't know if he's going to get the minutes to kind of be able to test himself and kind of get used to it. But I mean, if there's any injuries, God forbid, I wouldn't mind seeing him get more playing time at the point. But that'd be my pick as well, just by default. But you know, maybe someone steps up. I wouldn't be opposed. There were some people I think that stepped up, like Isaiah White did last year, that I kind of wasn't expecting. I thought he was just going to be a bench filler that transferred into USC to kind of say he played at USC, but he's proven me wrong, and he's done a good job.
Yeah, I will say I saw a little bit of Malik Thomas today, and he looks kind of ready.
He's got some spark, huh?
Yeah. Like, I feel like, obviously, like, he's not, I don't think he's going to be playing against good teams, but, like, you know, like, he looked like he was ready to go.
Yeah, he kind of has that Deion Waiters mentality, I think. He's just, like, ready to go at all times, ready to shoot. And I mean, that's good. I don't mind, because we haven't really had a scoring guard since, I mean, I guess Jonah. Does Jonah even count as a scoring guard? But this guy's literally, he's what?
I feel like he's more of a, he, like, plays within the system.
Yeah, exactly. Who happened to score a little bit. But, like, Malik Thomas is a straight, like, scoring guard. That's what he's built to do. And, you know, the guy who's going to drop 30 points. How many times has a USC person dropped 30 points? It very rarely happens. So
right.
He might be the first to do it in the next
couple. I love that. The Deion Waiters heat check.
The Waiters Island. The Waiters Island. I love that guy. Laker legend, Deion Waiters. All right, we can go to the next one. Most improved player. This is actually when I think you could pick a number, any number of people. So I'm interested to see what you guys think on this one.
I am a huge, as I mentioned, me and Troy, I think, are the fan club for Max. I think he got the short end of the stick with, obviously, you know, we're going through something here with COVID and not having a true offseason. And I thought last year should have been his breakout, but I think this year, he's put in the work. I have a lot of trust in him. For some reason, I know it's a dumb brain thing where he went to the same high school as Klay Thompson. So I'm like, oh, this guy's going to be a great defender and his shot's going to develop. Obviously nowhere near, but it's like I just keep waiting for that huge jump into like elite. And yeah, I just think he's going to make a big jump.
What do you think about that, Mike?
Yeah, I get that. I know you guys are the resident president of the Air Max fan club. So yeah, I could definitely see him making a good jump, especially when that shot starts falling, because we already know that he can compete on defense and stay within the offense usually there. I actually think that Drew Peterson, well, depending on how useful you thought Drew Peterson was, I felt that last year sometimes in clutch moments, you know, we. You guys know that Drew Peterson gets kind of frantic, and he like starts turning the ball over a decent amount. So I watched him this year, and he seems a lot more composed. He has a surprisingly nice post game when he gets switched on to a smaller guard. I've been pretty impressed by him.
Yeah, how about those fadeaways in the first game? Jeez, those things were clean.
Yeah,
did not know he had that in his game. Or at least he thought he had that in his game last year, and maybe he had a couple, but he actually has it in his game this year.
So right, exactly.
He's a bit taller too. So like, if he's hitting that consistently, not many people in college are going to be able to defend that.
Oh no, it's unguardable. If a guy with like, you know, point guard skills can shoot that and poke and back people down, it's really unguardable and valuable. It's a valuable shot to have, I think, when you can't get an offense going and maybe you just need a little spark plug, because like as you said, it's unguardable and you don't really need an offense to facilitate that shot. So that's a really good shout out. I probably also will say Max, but I think there are a couple others that I'll mention after I give my spiel on Max. So I think what's really important about Max is we need to take him for what he is. We can't be expecting, I know, like as Rob said, like we want to think he is this like Klay Thompson or has that potential. Probably doesn't, but I think we need to understand that I always make this comparison, and maybe it's because he looks like him a little bit, but like he's Matisse Thybulle, like light. Like that's who he is as a player. He's long. He's really good defender, like can stick on you like glue. He really good in the passing lanes. I mean, he had 4 steals today, and I think he had a couple last game as well. He's really long and good, you know, with his blocks as well. And then, you know, contributing 5-6 rebounds a game, just kind of flying out all over the court is a really valuable contribution. And I know people want to see him drop like 17 a game, but I'm just not sure that's ever who he's going to be. I think the one knock on him and what he really needs to improve, and if he does this, he's definitely my most improved player this year, is just his IQ. Like he often plays a little bit faster than he thinks a little bit faster than he plays, or if that makes sense, like where it doesn't really, you know, equate to each other. So he's a little bit out of rhythm and he makes some kind of boneheaded plays. And like, I mean, some of the shots today, like the pull-up threes were great shots and I don't mind him shooting if he's open and he's kind of in rhythm, but like, I think he forces the issue a little bit. And honestly, if he forces the issue driving, I'm okay with that. But taking bad shots, like bad perimeter shots, is just like a perfect way to get your offense disjointed. And we really don't need to see, you know, we don't need extra people taking jump shots like that, I don't think, for this team to be great. yeah. All the three-point shooting wasn't bad today, 40%. So a little bit better there. So the two names that I will kind of add on, I think Ethan Anderson, his shot looks a lot better this year. Like, he's developing into kind of like a knockdown shooter. I mean, he takes forever to shoot the ball, but like when he has a lot of room and space, like he's been making his threes with kind of regularity. And I mean, that's pretty valuable to have someone who can knock down two threes a game, especially because they're going to kind of leave him open to shoot those because they're not really expecting it from him. I mean, he seems to hit him in big moments too. So I was wondering what you guys thought about that.
Agreed. If we go back to that, what was it, UCLA, the home game where he went like, what is that, 5 of 7 for three, and we just blew them out. Like, he could be a game changer. Like, if he's knocking down those threes that he is going to get, he can really impact a game.
Yeah, he's been like catching, for the most part, he's been playing more off guard with Boogie playing on ball. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he's been able to catch like the ball in rhythm and making the shots. So I definitely agree with that. And yeah, it definitely also seems like a lot of the shots he makes are big shots.
Yeah, I mean, that clutch gene is really valuable. I think his problem is he's not great with the ball in his hands. And a lot of times, I think you saw last year when he got pressed, he made some bad decisions and didn't keep the ball. I think Boogie's like a really good dribbler and he's really good with the ball. So hopefully we can kind of just let him take the ball up during the press. But I mean, we'll see when better teams press us how we deal with that. And it's always been kind of a struggle for Enfield breaking the press. So we'll see if he has any tricks up his sleeves this year. And then my other kind of wild card for most improved, I think kind of just because he was kind of zero last year, was Koulibaly. I think if he plays at all this year, I think he's already shown in the first couple games that he played that, or if he only played one game, I don't remember if he played the second game, but he's already much better this year. It looks like he actually belongs on a college basketball court. He has a lot of energy. His shot looks okay. And it just kind of those hustle plays. Maybe he's only playing 6-7 minutes a game. I mean, that's super valuable if somebody's in foul trouble or we just kind of need a spark plug. So I know you guys kind of like him as well. So talk about him real quick.
Yeah, no, I was watching a lot of his off-season videos and following some of those ghost notes for basketball practices, and it seemed to be the consensus that he had improved a lot this offseason. His handle, you know, it looked like he actually belonged on the court. And you know, if we get some minutes from him and give Isaiah, you know, Isaiah some time off too, and on games where we can afford it, that'd be a valuable asset.
I feel like, isn't there kind of an overlap between him and Joshua Morgan?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, Morgan's also actually another person who I think looked a lot better this year than he did last year. And there is, because they're kind of limited to what they can do. And they're both kind of just like, you know, minute eaters, I guess. So you're right. With Morgan playing kind of well, I'm not sure how much Koulibaly actually gets on the court.
Yeah, because right now it seems like Joshua Morgan is the first big off the bench, but their minutes aren't that much different. I'm wondering if Andy's just kind of testing it out to see who's more ready and then have the other one, you know, go if one of them's not ready.
Yeah, and I think because Koulibaly's been sick like the last two games or hurt, he hasn't played. So, and he's been like in warm-ups on the sideline. So I was just, maybe something's going on there.
Yeah, I'm not really sure.
I'll have to look it up. Yeah, that. Because from the first game, you know, he brought a spark. So, yeah, I would expect him to get at least, you know, 10 minutes his last few games each.
Yeah, maybe we can get him in the kind of lesser teams we play upcoming. Let's see if we have like Eastern. I don't know if Eastern Kentucky's good. They might be one of those random, like, directional, like, Southern Midwestern teams that's actually kind of good. So I don't want to say they're bad before I actually do some research. all right, so next one would be we'll go to Sixth Man of the Year next. Who do you think would be the Sixth Man of the Year this year?
You want to take this, Rob?
Yeah, I can start us off. Depending on the, so if we go with this lineup, lineup with Drew and Boogie, I would say then Ethan Anderson could take those minutes, and if he is consistently making those wide open threes and not being forced so much to just be the primary ball handler, I think he could be, you know, a very important piece coming off the bench.
Yeah, I think that's actually a really good point. You can go ahead, Mike.
Oh, I was just going to say, so far, Ethan Anderson started the first game. Isaiah White started the second game. And then we had Max start today. So the rest of the starting lineup is all the same. But I feel like it's kind of hard to say, to name a specific six-man if, you know, we're going to be switching it up depending on lineups.
You read my mind. That's exactly what I was going to say. Like, it's basically whoever doesn't start. Like, you could tell me Max doesn't start, and I'd probably say he's the sixth man of the year, or Ethan. But if Ethan starts, then, like, maybe it's also you look at, like, Isaiah White. Like, Isaiah White's been really good, at least the latter half of last season. But if Isaiah White starts, which I hope kind of he doesn't, I mean, you could look at Max or Ethan. So, like, it really just depends on who starts to make that call. And I think we'll kind of see what the rotation looks like a little more as we play better teams. I mean, Anfield is kind of notoriously known for keeping a small rotation, like usually only plays 7 or 8 guys. Like, we're deep, but like we never really get our youngsters playing time unless it's a blowout. So like he's not going to drop like 10 or 11 people off the bench Florida State does or somebody like that, where they just like basically, replace 7-footers with 7-footers with 7-footers.
Right.
Which I don't understand how they do that every year, but I don't know where they find him. But
yeah, definitely agree that Isaiah White fits the prototype of a six man, right? He always comes in and play with energy, even when he's not making shots. You know, he's willing to do all the dirty work. So he definitely fits that prototype there. But if Ethan can get a shot going, then he could definitely be a steadying presence off the bench.
Yeah, I mean, he's been contributing since he was a freshman. He was a 3-star freshman and got legit playing time his freshman year. So like, he's considered a veteran now, and like, I know we were saying like he's a junior already. It's crazy. I feel like he just got here, but he's been here forever. And I mean, honestly, I think he's had a good career so far. Like, I think he gets a lot of flack just for the turnovers that he often creates, but he's been a pretty good Trojan so far, I think.
Agreed.
All right, we will go to, let's go offensive player of the year. Rob, you can start us.
Offensive, everyone's favorite pick, the minus 500 favorite, Isaiah, is just coming over from last year's tournament and how he's been shooting the three. I just feel like that'd be everyone's top pick, and it, he merits it. You know, it's if he keeps shooting like this, making big clutch shots like he did against Florida Gulf Coast today, that'd be huge. So, you know, I'm going to go with the favorite.
What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, it's tough to say it's not Isaiah, because I feel like even though he hasn't had a a terrific start to the season, he's still the reason that some of our bigs have been playing better is because most of the attention is focused on Isaiah. Right? In that sense, he's still the defensive player for me.
It's definitely who the ball is centered around every possession, whether it's like a pick and roll and kind of he's rolling or he gets it at the top of the post. Like, that's who the ball touches every time down the court. And I think while that might not, lead to stats directly, it's definitely making him more involved. Like, his assists are higher this year. His points are already, double digits pretty much every game. I think even in the Temple game, he had double digits despite the foul trouble. But like, he seems to be ready to take that role. He still looked a little like uncertain at times, I think, when he's assumed the role. I think him being the focal part of the offense is new to him, and it's something that he'll grow into as the season progresses. So I'm not too worried about it right now. I think he has the mentality for it. I think he's a lot more mature than when he first came. He's learned from his brother and his dad, and I think he kind of knows what to expect. And I'm sure he's, asking his brother questions and whatnot, and he's helping him out a little bit too, even though I guess he's the younger brother, but you think he's ready to take that next step.
Agreed.
I guess the only other person would probably be Boogie Ellis. I mean, he dropped 18 today, and his shot looks a lot better than I thought it was. I remember like looking at just highlights of last year. Like, he was not like dribbling and hitting a 15-foot pull-up, kind of like Taj did last year. Taj was that 23-year-old senior, 24-year-old senior or whatever. And so, like, I expect him to be able to hit that fundamental, mid-range jumper. That's kind of like, the staple of those kind of people. But, like, Boogie he's more of an energy guy. So the fact that he's able to stop on a dime and shoot that shot and then also shoot threes pretty well. He was 3-for-6 today, and he's been shooting pretty well throughout the season. I think he's probably the other guy that would challenge Isaiah for that spot. And I guess
he also and his confidence too.
Yeah, for sure. Like that dude, like we mentioned before, Waiters Island. He has confidence and bounces out of the gym every game he plays.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But yeah, Goodwin, I guess, is technically the other dark horse. Just the fact that he dropped 20 and he's going to be the recipient of all the attention that everybody else is getting. But I'm not sure I would classify him as like an offensive player of the year, even if his stats are like showing this. I think the other two are more fundamental to the offense.
Yep, definitely.
All right. So defensive player here. I think this could go one of two ways. I think I know where Rob's going to go with it, but we'll let him, you know, speak his mind.
So, you know, I'm always going to be an Air Max believer. And if he's getting these consistent minutes, I just see him. He's our lockdown guy. And I just don't see, obviously Boogie too. He's shown a lot. So those would be my two, but I just give Max a slight advantage. I think he's going to bring it this year, and I'm looking forward to it.
What about you, Mike?
Yeah, agreed. It's got to be Air Max right now. I think Isaiah White is a dark horse for me. Because sometimes, yeah, when we've had a matchup with the opponent's best player sometimes, just because he brings that energy. But on a night-to-night basis, definitely it's got to be Air Max.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's a good call on Isaiah White. I mean, he's like, there's no fundamentals at all in his game, offense or defense. There's just like nothing like you teach, but he just pesters the team and just is annoying the whole game. And kind of just looks like he's playing, on the court with his friends and just like kind of, you know, doing whatever he wants to do. And it's worked so far. I mean, he's been a valuable part of this team. He's a little kind of rusty today. Didn't have a great game today, but I agree. Max is definitely my pick. He's, the lockdown of, I mean, he was even guarding like the 5'7" point guard today and like just locking him down. And it was making that guy's life miserable. And I was very impressed by that. Cause like, you don't usually see Max like guard little guards like that, but he obviously he can guard anywhere from 1 to 4, and having that kind of diversity and versatility on the defensive end, is like just so valuable for a college basketball team.
Exactly.
Especially with like positionless basketball being so common nowadays. Okay, so I think the last one we have is just the MVP. So, I mean, this one, I think I know where you guys are going with it, but I'm still curious to see what you guys say.
Just from the energy that he brings and just having another, I just felt like we haven't had this sort of elite guard play. Or I mean, we had Taj Eady, but I mean, at the like a true point guard position that he's playing, I can really see Boogie being the guy. Today, I saw him shoot one, hit it off the side of the backboard, and immediately grabs his own rebound and goes score like nothing. He just shook it off and kept playing, and that's really tough to do, you know, and I just love his confidence. He brings it on defense. Just remember that huge turnover he created on defense against Temple in the clutch. Our team will really go far. If him and Isaiah are clicking, I can see them both just going off and securing us a win in the NCAA tournament. So I'll go with Boogie.
Okay. What about you, Mike?
I'm actually going with Boogie too. I think so far, you know, like, well, I think it's hard because I have a strong impression from the Temple game. And Isaiah looked a little bit flustered in that Temple game. So that left a pretty strong impression on me. And Boogie just seemed ready. He's always ready to go to war. He's the lead guard. He has the ball 80% of the time when he's on the court. You know, I think yeah, right now it's looking like he will be our MVP.
I agree with you. I actually thought you guys were both going to say Mobley, but I thought I was going to be the hipster and pick Boogie. But I agree. I mean, like, I was just looking at the line he dropped today, like 18, 8, and 6. Like, I can't remember the last time we had a guard drop anywhere near that. J-Mac might have had a triple double, or at least attempted one, or was close to one, but like, that's not USC basketball at all. So to have a guard that can contribute in so many different ways like that is just, you know, really, really valuable. And I mean, I think the thing is that probably separates him as the MVP from Isaiah is just the offense and defense. I think he's consistent on both ends. He can create a shot when he wants to on offense, and you know he's already going to be locked in on defense 24/7. So I think that just kind of two-way mentality is really going to be beneficial. And I think he's probably all conference this year if he keeps up the way he's playing. And I don't think I honestly think he's probably going to start playing better with the better teams that we face. Like, he just seems like that guy who steps up to the competition and he just wants the challenge and to show everybody kind of what he's made of.
Right.
Yeah. All right. I mean, that about does it for the superlative. So we could just do a quick recap of today's game. I can start us off. So kind of the reunion for Andy Enfield. I think they did some sort of like, pregame ceremony. This is his like 200th win, right? The last one we had was his 200th win, and Florida Gulf Coast was like obviously the first place he coached, and he was really instrumental in getting that program on the map, and that's why he's here at USC. So really good win. And honestly, I was very impressed by the crowd at Florida Gulf Coast. I wasn't anticipating that. Like, they were loud from the beginning, and I don't know if they're like super good this year, but like maybe it's just from the sheer number of students they have, kind of like ASU, where like, do they really care about basketball? I'm not sure, but they have enough students to fill a stadium, which is kind of like the opposite of USC. So it was actually like a more hostile crowd than I anticipated, but I was expecting us to win. I think the line was 12. But I think everybody, we had three people really step up today: Boogie, Isaiah, Chavez, and I guess actually four if you count Max. So like, I think like the stat line's going to show that we had a really good game. We kind of started a little slow, which I don't love to see, but I mean, we separated ourselves at halftime, and the ability to make halftime adjustments is so crucial. And Enfield has honestly struggled with that a lot in the recent years, and I think it's just I'm more and more confident in him going forward making those adjustments. So I'm not as worried watching these games, but still, I'm jaded by all those like blown 8 second leads and just like, letting the team run away in the second half. So hopefully a little bit of a change this year. But as far as today, they were definitely a team that kind of wanted to pride itself on the 3 point shot and kind of the rebounds and then take another 3 point shot. I mean, I don't even know how many shots they took today, but I felt like it was a lot of 3 pointers. It was only, no, it was 30. So yeah, that's what you expect from a team that's probably not as good. Try to make it up on the 3 point line. And we actually shot better than them on the 3 point line today. So I think our defense was pretty good. Couple of youngsters got minutes at the end of the game, so I think if you ever see that, that's when you know a game at least went somewhat well and you covered the spread. So, I mean, what do you think about the game today, Rob?
So I just want to second that thought on the crowd. They were really into it. They had all these chants going. I was trying to figure out what they were saying, but the whole time they brought the energy, and I was like, oh, okay, like this is a cool environment to play in. Even I don't know how good they'll be, but you like those games. It helps you with the experience. I will say, second half, I believe they started like five of either 4 of 4 or 5 of 5 from three, and they got it down to like five, and that's the point where like the crowd really got into it, and I was like, oh man, like what are we really about to lose as the heavy favorites? But luckily, with our guard play and Isaiah making some clutch threes, we were able to separate ourselves, and I like to see that, in a tough, hostile environment. That's always a good experience for you guys.
For sure. And I think our offense is best when we play like in transition. Like, I feel like those transition threes where Isaiah is kind of trailing and hitting like the top of the arc kind of three, or maybe Boogie's driving and hits like someone like Max or Isaiah White in the corner. Like, that was our tournament run last year. I feel like we were just hitting those clutch threes that kind of spark plugged us. And honestly, this to the start this year, we haven't really been shooting that well. So it's nice to see that we can at least shoot well, even if it's starting slow and finishing strong. I don't know how much of the game you saw today, Mike, but do you have any thoughts?
I honestly only tuned in for the last 5 minutes, so I saw more
Okay.
than anything else. But in the time I saw, Boogie would played pretty well. I saw some of the freshmen play, so that was cool to see. And that's where I got that impression that Malik Thomas, he seemed ready to go. And obviously Kobe Johnson has been pretty consistent in that front. So, but yeah, but otherwise you guys have that.
Yeah, 22 assists to 6 turnovers. That's a very un-USC like stat line. So I'm glad to see that. Usually it's more like 12 assists, 15 turnovers. So I think if we can keep that up, that's pretty good for us. Okay, I mean, I think that covers pretty much it. We actually pretty long episode today. I think we covered a lot of good stuff. Thank you again for joining me on the pod, and it's nice to talk to people instead of talking to a screen. So I really appreciate that.
Yeah,
No,
thanks.
absolutely.
We'll try to get you on a little bit more when maybe there's something crazy. I mean, I think we got to get at least one USC head coaching like podcast, because I feel like that's just such a hot topic. Even though I like the cat seems to be out of the bag with Aranda, there's a lot of smoke with that. So maybe, if nothing's happened by the end of the season, we can get a quick pod before they, you know, make the decision probably in early December. But we'll see about that. Who are you guys quick, just to kind of give a preview as of right now, who are you guys picking for the USC, just in case they decide before we have the podcast?
I would love Aranda. I'm sold. I know the, it seems like it's just like the flavor of the month or whatever you call it. But I do. I like the discipline, and it just feels like he would kind of change the culture.
I agree. What about you, Mike?
Honestly, when it comes to USC, when it comes to like other schools and stuff, I kind of defer to like you and Rob. And if you guys are sold on Aranda, so am I. I know that he's a West Coast guy, so that should be good with recruiting. I know some of our other candidates are not necessarily West Coast folks. So, and yeah, otherwise, yeah, the discipline, you know, the, like Rob was saying, like playing hard, smash mouth football, like, yeah, I'm into it.
Yeah, I was expecting you to say Urban Meyer. I didn't want to get canceled that take. I mean, in a perfect world, you know, where that off the field stuff isn't an issue, I think Urban Meyer would probably still be my number one, but it's just not realistic. And I don't know. I just don't want to deal with that. I just want like a normal head coach who knows how to coach football and just has no off the field issues. We don't need it. We don't need any more of that. But yeah, that's about it. I mean, you know, maybe we actually in the future when the Premier League, I mean, I know Mike's a Tottenham fan, so he probably won't be in the race at the end of the season. But if it comes down to the wire, we might have a quick little soccer podcast just to kind of you know, shoot the breeze. It'd be a lot of fun.
And then hopefully a new coach by that point.
Well, I mean, Mike's got a new coach. So you guys, who are they? They were saying Zidane, I heard. That was last
night. That's my goal, because originally it was Conte, but yeah.
Mike took the first. Mike took the sloppy seconds or something.
He wanted to go to United, but then United did the call, so then he was like, fine, I'll go to Tottenham.
enough of the slander for Mike. I don't want to make him feel bad for liking Tottenham. All right, yeah, thanks for joining us, and we will see you guys next time.